DiscerningHearts.com, in cooperation with the Oblates of the Virgin Mary, presents the Second Week Rules for the Discernment of Spirits, an Ignatian Guide to a Greater Discernment of Spirits with Father Timothy Gallagher. Father Gallagher is a member of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary. He is featured on several series found on the Eternal Word television network. He's also the author of numerous books on the spiritual teachings of St. Ignatius of Loyola and the Venerable Bruno Lanteri, as well as other works focused on aspects of the spiritual life, including Spiritual Consolation, the book on which this series is based. The Second Week Rules for the Discernment of Spirits, an Ignatian Guide to a Greater Discernment of Spirits with Father Timothy Gallagher. We now continue with Part 2 of Conference Talk 3 with Father Timothy Gallagher.
All right, let's go back to our issue now. Person in the second spiritual situation, when the enemy may be tempting under the appearance of good, Patricia, Charles, and so forth, how can we know whether an experience of spiritual consolation with the thoughts that arise from it is of the good spirit or of the enemy? How can Patricia know whether the consolation that she feels now with regard to serving the refugees is really the way God is leading, and God is not asking her to serve the poor in the parish? Or Deacon Charles, the joy that he feels about the thought of working with the young in the parish, whether that is actually of God or perhaps the enemy tempting under the appearance of good. If the experience is given and is a consolation without preceding cause, it is clearly of God. But now we come to what is really the question that Ignatius focuses on in the bulk of the rules, because it's the more common question. What about the more common case of consolation with preceding cause? How does a person in the second spiritual situation know whether this is of God or not? So Patricia, as she hears the homily at the Sunday morning Mass of Matthew 25, "I was a stranger and you welcomed me," a warm sense of joy stirs up in her heart, a sense of God's love and closeness with the Lord, and the thought that maybe God is actually calling me to serve these refugees who are in such need of help. How can Patricia answer this question? Clearly, this is consolation with preceding cause. If she weren't hearing the gospel and taking in the words of it, there is a spiritual object in the time immediately preceding, there's the link in her own activity and so forth. So she's experiencing consolation with preceding cause, with thoughts about another good and holy project. How can she know whether that's of God or not? That's the more common question that we're going to face in second mode discernment. Ignatius dedicates the next five rules to answering this question and shapes what I think we can confidently say is the clearest and most usable answer in our Catholic spiritual tradition to a question which is quite important, obviously, for the individual in question and for the many people who will be affected by that person's discernment. Now, as an introduction to rules 3 to 7, these next five rules, I'd invite us to look together at a case. As an introduction to these next five rules, I'd like to invite us to look in the handout on page 8, and let's look at the situation of Kathy. And we'll be accompanying Kathy over the next five rules. Kathy is a 45-year-old high school teacher. She is a woman of faith and of deep daily prayer, like everyone we're going to deal with in the second set of rules. This is a woman who loves the Lord. Over the years, her love and union with the Lord have grown richly. We have a maturing profile. Both in her family and at work, Kathy seeks to love and serve the Lord, her one deepest desire. Others appreciate her calm and joyful presence, and through contact with her, a number have come closer to Christ and the Church. As her various commitments permit, Kathy is active in her parish, a presence that others in the community welcome. 5 years ago, Kathy was approached by the principal of an upscale high school for capable students run by a religious order. The principal shared the struggles of the high school. Because of poor management and personality conflicts, the school had suffered to the point that its viability was in question. Parents had withdrawn their children, a climate of division reigned, serious financial difficulties had risen, and the specifically Catholic dimension of the school had nearly disappeared. Knowing Kathy and appreciating both her life of faith and her competence as a teacher, the principal asked her to teach at this high school. The principal saw her as one whose presence would strengthen the Catholic dimension of the school, foster unity, fortify the academic level of the school, and might be key to its survival. Kathy accepted. Over the next 5 years, the school gradually improved. It made headway in its financial struggles, and its internal divisions began to diminish. Its Catholic dimension in catechesis and prayer grew more prominent. As this happened, the drop in enrollment ceased, and the numbers recently have begun even to increase. The religious order and the principal began to see hope that the school might survive and continue a valuable service to young Catholics and others who would have important roles in society. Kathy's presence and teaching have been one significant cause of this growth, and the principal and sisters are grateful to her. And now the following happens. One day, a meeting takes Kathy to an inner-city school for disadvantaged students. She is deeply struck by the poverty and great need she witnesses there. Several days later, as her morning begins, Kathy prays as usual with the day's gospel. This day, the gospel is from Luke 4, that is Jesus in the synagogue when he proclaims his messianic program using the words of Isaiah. And verse 18 speaks deeply to her heart. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. As Kathy prays, the thought of teaching in the inner city school arises in her heart. A stirring of deep joy, of closeness with the Lord, and a sense of the Lord's great love for her accompanies the thought and fills her prayer. Reverently, what we're witnessing here is consolation with preceding cause. There is a spiritual object. Luke 4:18. It's because Kathy opens her mind and her heart actively to this spiritual object, to use that phrase, to this verse, that the spiritual consolation comes with a very recognizable link between the object, her activity, and the consolation that follows. And as she receives this consolation with preceding cause, a new thought is born in her heart. Is it possible, Lord, that you might be calling me to take the next step in growth and actually teach in the inner city where there's such great need? Kathy begins to wonder whether this joy and attraction might be the Lord calling her to imitate him more deeply in direct service of the poor. So we have exactly the spiritual situation Ignatius is going to address in Rules 3 through 7. She knows that the inner city school she visited recently has much need of teachers and would greatly appreciate her presence if she made herself available. During the next days, a similar joy and sense of closeness to the Lord, spiritual consolation with cause, fill Kathy's heart as she thinks of teaching in the inner city school. So this is not just one experience now, this remains as the next days go by. She plans to speak to Father Mark, her spiritual director, about this in their next meeting and to seek his help. So, what do we say about this situation? How can Kathy discern? She's doing wonderful work in the upscale high school in which she's teaching. But now, with warm and abundant and ongoing spiritual consolation, a thought of serving the Lord more directly in direct service of the poor, like Jesus, who was sent to the poor, has stirred in her heart. Obviously, here too, in the inner city school, there's great need. She could make a real contribution. Now, obviously, in this discernment, the first set of rules is going to be of no help at all. There's no spiritual desolation anywhere in this picture. She may very well be a person in the second spiritual situation. She appears to have that profile. She is a generous, dedicated, deeply prayerful, Christ-centered, mature Christian, doing wonderful and very fruitful work in the church and in society through as a teacher. She has not received a consolation with preceding cause. with regard to this discernment. So rule two, and the security that consolation without preceding cause would give is absent in this scenario and will not help her to discern. So here's her question. And she and Father Mark are going to need to work with this. Is this spiritual consolation with the thought of moving from the suburban high school to the inner city high school, is that of the good spirit? Is that truly the Lord calling her to take the next step in growth and in service? Or is it the enemy tempting her under the appearance of good in an attempt to undermine the wonderful work that is happening and in some real measure through Kathy's presence and contribution in the more upscale high school with students who are going to have a real impact, probably in positions of leadership down the line in society? Which of these two is it, good spirit or enemy? And as we said earlier, this discernment really matters because many people are going to be affected, beginning with Kathy herself. She's flourishing right now. Will she flourish even more and grow even more if she does move to the inner city school? Or will it begin to weaken her energy and her dedication and her spiritual life in some way? And if she leaves the school, many people who are benefiting by her presence will be deprived of it. If she does go to the school, many people will benefit from her presence. So the discernment really matters. And Kathy, wisely recognizing this, brings this to spiritual direction with Father Mark. All right, that's the issue. And Ignatius is now, in the next five rules, going to give the guidelines that we need to resolve discernment in this situation.
We'll return to the second week rules for the discernment of spirits with Father Timothy Gallagher in just a moment. Did you know that Discerning Hearts has a free app in which you can find all your favorite Discerning Hearts programming? Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Deacon James Keating, Mike Aquilina, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, and so many more are found on the Discerning Hearts free app. Did you also know that you can stream Discerning Hearts programming on numerous streaming platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and so many more? And did you know that Discerning Hearts also has the YouTube page? Be sure to check out all these different places where you can find Discerning Hearts. A prayer of St. Ignatius of Loyola.
Take, Lord, and receive all my liberty, my memory, my understanding, and my entire will, all that I have and call my own. You have given all to me. To you, Lord, I return it. Everything is yours. Do with it what you will. Give me only your love and your grace. That is enough for me. Amen.
Hello, my name is Deacon Omar Gutierrez, and I want to ask you to support Discerning Hearts in a special way. We, Chris McGregor, the board, and I all know that not everyone listening can help financially. We know we have listeners from all parts of the world, and we have made a commitment since the beginning to make the truths shared through Discerning Hearts totally free. So while you may not be able to contribute financially, what you can do is certainly pray, but also give us positive reviews on whatever platform you use to listen to us. If it's iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, however it is that you get these podcasts, or if you're on YouTube and you like our videos, please give us a good rating and write a review. The more good ratings and reviews we get, the higher our profile, and the more listeners will discover us, listeners who may have the means to contribute in the future. Please consider rating us and writing a positive review today.
We now return to the second week rules for the discernment of spirits with Father Timothy Gallagher.
And let's begin by looking at rule three. And I'd like to introduce rule three by looking at two contrasting examples. And the first we'll take from the spiritual diary of this servant, wonderful woman, servant of God, Elizabeth Lazare, French woman who died in 1914. Lovely story, well worth getting to know. A good marriage, a happy marriage with her husband, but he was a militant atheist. And after her death, he was reading through her journal. And the content of her journal, as he realized there was a whole other side to his wife that he'd never known, deeply pierced his heart, brought him into the church. He eventually became a Dominican priest and spread his wife's spiritual message, which is why we have it today. Now, on this particular occasion, Elizabeth and her husband have gone down to Rome. They're just visiting in Rome for some days. And Elizabeth leaves the others, walks down to St. Peter's, and the following takes place. I set out alone for St. Peter's, and after going to confession to a French-speaking priest, if you ever go to St. Peter's, you can hear, you have your confession heard in many languages there. And after going to confession to a French-speaking priest, I went to communion in the chapel of the Blessed Sacrament. You can still visit that chapel today. In my years as a seminarian in Rome, we used to often pray there. The church is so large that this chapel, maybe about a third of the way up on the right-hand side of the church, is still pretty large. So she goes to confession, then she goes into this chapel, and she receives communion. Those moments were completely and supernaturally happy. So very reverently, what we're witnessing here is obviously spiritual consolation, with or without previous cause. And the answer is very clear. To use Ignatius' language, there is a spiritual object, and it's the reception of the double sacrament of confession and Holy Communion, to which she opens her mind and heart, her whole being, and the link between her opening herself to these two sacraments and the consolation that follows is very evident. So that Elizabeth is receiving a rich experience of spiritual consolation with preceding cause. I felt in myself the living presence of the Blessed Christ, of God Himself, bringing me an ineffable love. This incomparable soul spoke to mine, and all the infinite tenderness of the Savior passed for an instant into me. Never will this divine trace be effaced. The triumphant Christ, the eternal Word, He who as man has suffered and loved, the one living God, took possession of my soul for all eternity. In that unforgettable moment, this is a kind of pivotal, transforming moment. And what happens in the richness of this spiritual consolation, I felt myself renewed to my very depths by Him, ready for a new life, for duty, for the work intended by His providence. I gave myself without reserve, and I gave Him the future. I then heard Mass in another chapel in profound joy and peace. I prayed again, and then I knelt close to the confession, that's the space immediately in front of the main altar, in St. Peter, in a last intimate and solemn consecration. And now the fruits of this. On my return, so she goes back to where she and her husband are staying. He's with his friends. This is this atheistic environment. I found myself in an atmosphere of irony, criticism, and indifference, but nothing mattered. The flame of Christ was still burning within me. So with reverence, let's approach this experience for the sake of the learning that we're exploring here. Elizabeth experiences spiritual consolation. As we said, it's clearly spiritual consolation with preceding cause. She is, beyond any question at this point, a person in the second spiritual situation. And everything about this experience, I'm sure we would all agree, has the feel of God. And by that, what we mean is not only is the spiritual consolation genuine in itself, but where it leads, the fruits that it engenders are so evident and so rich and so abundant and so strengthening for Elizabeth that we really can't doubt that this whole experience is of God. This is a spiritual consolation with preceding cause, given by the good spirit, to use Ignatius' terms, because of the abundant fruit of this entire experience. Now, let's look at the experience of Ignatius at Manresa. Let's go back to this. We saw it earlier. For another experience of spiritual consolation with a very different feel about it. But when he went to rest, many times there came to him great illuminations and great spiritual consolation. So not only spiritual consolation, but abundant, rich, overflowing spiritual consolation with good and holy thoughts. Ignatius isn't using this vocabulary here, but it's clear from the experience that this is with preceding cause. There came to him great illuminations and great spiritual consolations, which caused him to lose much of the time that he had set aside for sleep, and that was not much. Considering this several times, he reflected that he had decided to devote much time to dealing with God, and afterward all the rest of the day as well. And consequently, he began to doubt whether those illuminations came from the good spirit. And he concluded that it would be better to reject them and to sleep during the time determined, and this he did. So, again, we have a person receiving warm, abundant spiritual consolation. Again, we have a person, and this is clearly the case of Ignatius at this point in Manresa, richly in the second spiritual situation. But this time, the feel of the spiritual consolation is very different. This time, we have the feel of the enemy, and not primarily at all because the spiritual consolation is not genuine spiritual consolation, and the illuminations are not genuinely good and holy, but because of where this leads. If Ignatius opens himself to this, what it's going to do is exhaust him over a period of what? Some days, weeks, whatever it might be, and lead to a point where he may wind up relinquishing this whole effort to grow. So that because what Ignatius discerns here, as we've said earlier, by the objective consequences of the spiritual consolation, if I continue to open my heart to this spiritual consolation, will it help me or will it harm me spiritually? And in this case, it will harm him spiritually so that he discerns that this is not of the good spirit and should be rejected, which is what he does. So, both Elizabeth and Ignatius experience genuine spiritual consolation, but with sharply contrasting spiritual significance. The difference, as I said, is not in the quality itself of the spiritual. In other words, that Elizabeth receives genuine spiritual consolation and Ignatius does not receive genuine spiritual consolation. Both receive genuine spiritual consolation. But the difference lies in something external. And this is how the discernment happens, by where it leads. In the one case, Elizabeth is strengthened. And in the second case, Ignatius, if he does not reject this, is going to be weakened. And this already gives us the key, the interpretive key that Ignatius is going to supply to Kathy, Patricia, Charles, anyone in this situation who needs to discern. But he's going to spell this out in some detail in the subsequent rules. Well, let's read the text of the third rule. We'll at least introduce it, and then we'll pick it up next time. So the third, with cause. So Ignatius is now, obviously, he means preceding cause. The shift from the second rule focuses on consolation without preceding cause. Ignatius now turns to the more common consolation with preceding cause. With cause, both the good angel and the bad can console the soul, obviously for contrary ends or purposes. The good angel gives consolation of this kind for the profit of the soul, like Elizabeth, that it may grow and rise from good to better. And the bad angel for the contrary, to harm the soul. And later on, just note the later on, because this is the key, and later on to draw it to his damnable intention and malice. So, in Rule 3, Ignatius is turning now to the more common consolation with preceding cause, and makes this clear and very significant affirmation that if it is consolation with preceding cause, both the good spirit and the enemy can give that kind of consolation. When we're dealing with a person in the second spiritual situation and so on, everything that we've said prior. In the second spiritual situation, the enemy can give spiritual consolation with preceding cause. And this is a teaching with significant consequences for those in the second spiritual situation. Father Mark, for example, will presume is conversant with this teaching of Ignatius, and he will recognize that just because Kathy has received and on a number of days, warm spiritual consolation with the thought of moving to the inner city school to follow Jesus more clearly, closely in his service to the poor. That spiritual consolation, because it is spiritual consolation with preceding cause, does not resolve the discernment, because both the good spirit and the enemy can give that kind of spiritual consolation to a person in the second spiritual situation. All right. In the first spiritual situation, the spiritual consolation is only of the good spirit, as Ignatius says in his classic Rule 5. In the first spiritual situation, is it spiritual consolation? Then the discernment is complete. Welcome it and follow it. Like Patricia, for example, when she's struggling and she prays with Jesus walking on water and how he reaches out his hand to Peter when he falters and her heart is warmed. You're there with me too. All she needs to know that it's spirit is that it's spiritual consolation, and she can open her heart confidently to it. Why? Because the enemy is not at this stage is not giving spiritual consolation with preceding cause. The enemy doesn't need that at this stage. The spiritual desolation and discouragement is an effective tactic if the person in the spiritual situation does not discern it. In the second spiritual situation, is it consolation with preceding cause? Then further discernment is necessary. Okay, we'll stop here and pick it up in our next talk.
You've been listening to The Second Week Rules for the Discernment of Spirits, an Ignatian Guide to a Greater Discernment of Spirits with Father Timothy Gallagher. To hear and or to download the podcast version of this conference, visit discerninghearts.com, or you can find it within the free Discerning Hearts app. To view Father Gallagher's video presentation of this conference, visit discerninghearts.com or the Discerning Hearts YouTube channel. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts in cooperation with the Oblates of the Virgin Mary. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission. And if you feel us worthy, consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for The Second Week Rules for the Discernment of Spirits, an Ignatian Guide to a Greater Discernment of Spirits with Father Timothy Gallagher.